My guest on Mind, Body, Spirit is Byron Katie, and she's also here with her collaborator, Stephen Mitchell. We're here to talk about The Work, is what it's called. The book chronicles The Work. It's called Loving What Is, Four Questions That Can Change Your Life. Hello, Katie.
Hello. Good to be here.
And welcome back to Stephen Mitchell.
Hi.
Yeah. It's sort of a different kind of context here, isn't it, Stephen?
Different and the same.
Now, you've written the book together.
Yes.
Yeah. But having read it, it seems the work, as you, Katie, you seem to be the one who sits down with people and goes through this, is that?
Yes. Uh-huh. Yeah. It's a work I discovered 16 years ago. I was going through an amazing, deep state of depression, like 10 years, at least 10 years. And the last 2 years, I was so depressed, so full of rage and confusion and despair that my children were frightened of me, often avoided me, and I was miserable. I had plenty of money, successful career, my children were healthy, but I was miserable. So what happened was, eventually I ended up in a halfway house. My life was hell. Every day I wanted to die. I was lying on a floor, and I was asleep on the floor, sleeping there because I didn't deserve the bed that was in the room. My self-esteem was so low. That's what it was like. Mm. So sleeping on the floor each night, one morning I woke up and I was, you know, in that moment, everything was clear. All my problems were gone. It was kind of a miraculous time. All my problems were gone. And in that instant, I realized the cause of all my problems and the cause of all people's problems, all human beings' problems. And the problem for me was my thinking. I realized that when I believed my thoughts, I suffered. But when I questioned my thoughts, I didn't suffer. And in that instant, the questions were alive. So that's been my life's work. And then to voice that, you know, I do very well at voicing it, but Stephen is, he's a master, so it's very clear in Loving What Is.
Well, you say that I'm a lover of what is, not because I'm a spiritual person, because it hurts when I argue with reality.
Yes, and that's what I noticed. My case against reality, when I argue with reality, I lose, but only 100% of the time. And it doesn't mean that I'm not full of action, but I have simply found that love is the great motivator and that fear is inefficient.
This thought about reality and also, or this, it's not really a thought, because I was thinking about your notion about thoughts being harmless unless we're attached to them. Stephen, we've talked before about some of the great spiritual traditions. It's a very Buddhist concept at work here about attachment, isn't there?
Absolutely. And you could say that it's the core of all the great spiritual traditions. There's something totally central about Katie's work and extremely powerful. I think, personally, that it's the most powerful method to end human suffering that's ever been devised. It's very simple, it's very accessible, and it's exactly harmonious with what the Buddha saw, what Lao Tzu saw, and all the rest of the great ones, in my experience.
So what we're looking at here is something that, again and again, as Stephen said throughout this book, the notion of people saying, this is too simple.
Yes, that's
to really work.
That's the only complaint I've ever had.
So, well, let's talk about the simplicity here. Actually, it's kind of a poetic here. I realized when I wrote this down. Here it is. Here's the simplicity. Judge your neighbor, write it down, ask four questions, turn it around.
That's it, the end.
And contained within that is what you call the work. Okay, let's get going on this. Judge your neighbor. That seems counterintuitive. We're not supposed to judge our neighbors.
That's what I'd always heard. And without a teacher and without a way or religion, you know, my religion was let me support my children and my household and have a good life. Mm-hmm. That wasn't working. So when I experienced what was true for me on that floor, what was left were all these judgments. So I had to begin with what I did best. And it was very clear in reality what I did best was judge the world. Judge me, judge you. That's what I was good at. So I began there. So I questioned the stressful thoughts, because the stressful ones were always the one that argued with reality. The stressful thoughts say there's something wrong, there's something out of control, there's something terrible. And so when we, those are stressful, you know, when you think those thoughts, feel the stress. So when we question them, that ends suffering, because we come to see that those thoughts are not true with us, and that's why the stress is there. That stress is a gift. It's a built-in alarm clock that says, wake you up, you're in a dream.
If I understand it right, it's the thought's not stressful in and of itself. It's the attachment to the thought.
Yes, the meaning
the belief in
it.
The thought.
Yeah, believing that it's true.
Okay. And if I may insert something here.
Anytime, Stephen.
Yes, I think one of the brilliances of the work is that it asks people to write down their judgments. And in effect, what happens is that, as Katie says, when the mind is stopped on paper, it's much easier to meet it with understanding. In the traditional systems of meditation and spiritual practice, that doesn't happen. People aren't asked to write things down. And it's a very powerful and brilliant and simple method of photographing the mind in an instant, and then of dealing with it. So that's what it means, write it down.
Or you say, I like this. I mean, I've got a fairly facile mind, and I'm also aware that that's a weakness as well as a strength. You say your mind will outsmart you unless you can stop it with paper. Kind of reminded me of that game we played as a kid, you know, paper, rock, scissors.
Yes.
So
uh-huh.
Paper stops mind.
Yes, paper stops mind.
So what exactly am I writing down?
Anything that that is that feels stressful inside of you. I worked with a man a few days ago who he was furious. His partner, his business partner, had called him a troublemaker in front of his peers, and had not apologized. Mm-hmm. And this man was just sick inside with this. He owes me an apology. He owes me. He should apologize. And we're, you know, this isn't going to work itself out until he apologizes. So I said, you know, the reason you're here is for this work. You know, the reason you're here is you're suffering with it. And your business is suffering. So let's do inquiry. Your partner should apologize. Is it true? Yes, he said. It's absolutely true. I'm sure of it. Look what he did. He called me a troublemaker in front of our business associates. And so I said, your partner should apologize. That was the thought he had written down. Can you absolutely know that's true?
That's the second question.
And that's the second, yes.
So is it true? And then they'll usually say yes, because they've written it down. Then you come in again. Is it absolutely true?
Yes.
And not just that, but can you absolutely know it's true? I think that's an important way to put it.
Yes, it is, you know, because we're so sure. It's this I know mind. We're so positive. And there's a lot of pain that goes with that. So when I ask him, can you absolutely know that it's true? He began to unwind. He began to look at it. He said things like, I can't know where he's coming from. Oh my goodness, for all I know, he really believes I'm a troublemaker and doesn't believe he owes me an apology. But he began to consider. And then the third question, how do you react when you think that thought? Mm-hmm. How do you think the thought? And see, it argues with reality because the man has not apologized. That's the reality. How do I know it's not true? He should apologize. He has not. That's reality. So I ask him, how do you react when you think the thought? And he began to just spill out of himself. He said, I talk about him behind his back. He comes up with a good idea. It doesn't matter to me. I slam it down. I'm not courteous to him. And then he said, oh my goodness, I am a troublemaker. He's right. Our business is dropping because of all of this. I'm the one causing trouble. So then I said, who would you be without this thought?
That's the fourth question.
Question four. Yeah.
Yes.
Who would you be without the thought?
He should apologize. And he said, well, right now I'd be apologizing to him as fast as I could. Who would I be without the thought? When he came up with a good idea, I'd listen. We'd be making more money. And I wouldn't take all of this stress home to my family. And I wouldn't
be his friend.
I'd be his friend. That was the first thing he came up with.
That's actually a very touching observation, isn't it?
Yes, it is. And he discovered himself because he was he really wanted to know the truth.
He moved very quickly.
People do.
There's a lot of dialogues in this book from doing these four questions. Again, is it true? Can you absolutely know it's true? How do you react when you think that thought? And who would you be without that thought? Yeah. Then you say, I don't know if it's the most powerful, but very powerful part of this. You say, turn it around.
Yes, and I asked him, how would you turn it around? You know, what is the opposite of that? And what he came up with is, I should apologize. And he, you know, through question number three, he saw what for. He had realized himself again. And another turnaround was he should not apologize. And this was very hard for him to take, but he realized something very important for him. And because he really wanted to know the truth, there was a lot of humility in it. And he's doing all of this.
What Katie means by through question number three, he realized it is, he realized in his answers to the question, how do I react when I believe this thought, that he was talking behind his partner's back, he was blaming him, he was getting in the way of his good ideas, etc. And that's what he realized he should apologize for.
And then he found a third turnaround. I should apologize to myself.
Myself, I was thinking that.
And look at what he put himself through simply because he was living a lie. And he would have gone to the grave with this. You know, on our deathbed, we say, you know, how you doing? Well, you know, this man owes me an apology. I don't want to see him.
You also talk about not only to yourself and to the other, but another turnaround you say is to the opposite. I was trying to think the opposite in this case. Would it be some kind of appreciation? I'm trying to think, what would the opposite be here?
Well, it could be, the extreme opposite would be, he should not apologize to me.
And
that's where we hit reality. Mm. Again, how do I know he should not apologize? He hasn't. That's what is. That's reality. And I'm arguing with it. And all we're talking about here is a past. It doesn't mean he's not going to apologize tomorrow. But if I apologize, if I realize myself that he was right.
You say reality is always kinder than the stories that we tell about reality or the fantasy. Now, the story to you is what you've just recounted, this man telling his story. Mm-hmm. We're all loaded with stories.
Yeah.
It's sort of that baggage that we've carried since we were kids.
Yes.
It was intriguing to, I reflected about this, that these stories are not kinder than what is. This also is...
at the kindest.
Well, it's not the way we have learned to live in this world, is it, Katie?
No, it's backward. That's why we still have war. If we look at our history books, we've had war. All of, you know, Cain and Abel kind of history, all the way up. We're fighting with our partners. We're arguing with our children. And we're arguing inside ourselves. So we're like ancients. We're ancients that haven't moved from the simplest density. And when we begin to question our thoughts, this mind that just moves so fast, it starts to go into a realm of solutions. But as long as it's stuck and he should apologize or my children should pick up their socks and I believe it with the socks on the floor in front of my eyes and I'm arguing this, I have war with my children, I have war with myself, and this incredible genius we call mind is stuck, and there's no way it can heal a system itself like a planet.
And you know what, just to continue that story, the socks usually don't get picked up anyway.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
You say peace is who you are without a story, who you already are. So there's some sense here, and again, Stephen, I'm struck with how the great spiritual traditions have they all say something like this, without necessarily using this particular phraseology. Peace is within, it's already achieved, but we've encrusted ourselves with so much we don't know that in reality.
That's true, and people who have been deeply drawn towards these spiritual traditions have always, I think, wanted a direct way into that peace, and it's not always been obvious. This gives an extremely direct way. What Katie says is, question the thoughts, and what's left is peace. And it's truly, it truly works. It's truly accessible, effective, even for children.
That's Stephen Mitchell. He and Byron Katie are here talking about the work as it's defined. It's chronicled in the new book, Loving What Is, Four Questions That Can Change Your Life. You know, in the chapter on underlying beliefs, I mean, I could pick out a number of the dialogues. There's probably more than a dozen of them. He sat down with a man named Charles, whose wife had left him. And I'm just picking that one, I suppose, for a variety of reasons. But it's very interesting here because Charles's story is all of ours in the sense of maybe not having gone through losing a mate and having an affair, but this notion that the other will make me happy. Charles had this belief that his wife, Deborah is her name, was supposed to make him happy.
Yes.
He came to you with a problem. My wife has left me. She's gone to Europe with this man, and I'm in great pain. But it
and
ran a lot.
She's causing me the pain. She's causing my pain.
Yes. Yeah.
So he's sitting in his favorite chair. She's gone. Say she's in Europe. He's sitting in his comfortable chair, and he has the thought, she's supposed to make me happy. She should stay with me. Mm-hmm. Reality is she's gone. With that thought, hell. Who would he be without the thought?
Happy.
Peace.
Or peaceful, yeah.
And he's calling, he is thinking that she is the cause of his hell in that moment, but he has not questioned that thought. And so he is the cause of his hell in that moment. So there are two ways to sit in that chair. Either way, he's sitting there. One is heaven and one is hell. One is in peace, one is in amazing stress and depression.
You said to Charles, you want her to be alive for you. Is it your sense from, I mean, you've worked with many people now over the last 15 years.
Yes.
That's how many of us live with others, that we need them to be lies for us?
Yes.
And along with that, as I watch Charles sort of work through this, because I think one objection would be, this is an invitation to try to think our way out of thinking.
Yes.
And it's not going to last very long because, no. You know, we're going to deny feelings if we use our thinking to deny things. You know what
yes,
I mean?
Yes, I do. But, you know, it's so simple. If I think the thought, you're supposed to make me happy and you leave me, then my mind's job is to be right. So it's going to do its job. Whatever you do, you're gone. I believe it's your job to be here for me. You promised. You married me. You promised. So now it's my mind's job to be right. So for the rest of my life, if I don't question my thinking, you are my problem, and I never realize the end of suffering.
You know, most of us with these, what Katie calls stories or thoughts or a series of thoughts, are positive that that's reality. For instance, in Charles's case, she betrayed me. If anybody were to talk with him in any kind of way, rational or irrational, he wouldn't be budged from that. That's what happened, he would have said. She betrayed me. She had sex with another man. And there would have been no way, it seems to me, out of his misery, even with time, even with another marriage. These things get a little bit more bearable, but they don't basically change. And what happens when you apply the powerful tool of these four questions and turn around is that you get to see for yourself, in your bones, in your blood, that there's a difference between the story and reality, and that she betrayed me is simply a very powerful thought.
And you know, here is what mm-hmm. happens. Without questioning the thought, I have the thought she betrayed me. I'm sitting in my comfortable chair. How do I react when I think that thought? My next thought goes to no one loves me. I'm unacceptable. It goes and goes, depression. And then how do we live when we think that thought and we feel that way? That's when we go to the refrigerator. That's when we go to our alcohol. That's when we yell at our children. That's how we react when we think that thought without questioning it. And I have people that come to me and say, smoking quit me. I didn't want to quit smoking, but smoking quit me. What they were doing is they were working on cause. They were doing the work on their mother, on their father, on their sister, on their brother. And the effects of original cause are changing. It's because we're working with the projector, not the projected. That's why we still have war on this planet. We're trying to stop the projection, and we have not worked on the projector innocently because we haven't known how.
Katie's referring to the mind as the projector, of the outside world.
And that's also, I guess, why you say that actually you don't let go of your thoughts. I think you put it this way: I meet them with understanding, and then they let go of me.
Yes.
I'd like people to sort of reflect on that, because again, you've turned something inside out here.
Yes, we've had it backwards. That's what I saw on the floor. But it's like walking down the road. You see a snake. You're terrified of snakes. You jump back, and you think, "Oh my God, that was close." On closer examination, you see it's a rope. Now, I defy you to stand there for 100 years and make that rope a snake again. You can't. You cannot. And that's what this work does. We see what's true, and then we cannot make that thought frighten us again. We cannot make that thought has no power to depress us again. In fact, to think the thought, it used to bring depression. Now to think the thought, it brings laughter. Then the next time the thought comes, because you know that they're like unidentified flying objects. They come in when they want to. They come in, the next time you have the thought, you may not even notice. And this is an attachment. We don't attach to things and people. We're attached to our thoughts about things and people.
And one of the wonderful things about the work is precisely this insight. In traditional spiritual traditions, what happens is that people hear the teaching, let go of your thinking. Even the great ones, like the Tao Te Ching, let go of your thinking, be at peace. And they can't let go of their thinking. It's not possible. And then they start to feel stressed because, you know, I guess I'm not doing it right, or I'm not a good spiritual practitioner, whatever. This method, the work, is, since it addresses cause, makes it totally effortless to let go, because
In fact, I say, don't let go of your thoughts. Don't. Invite them. Bring them in. Open your arms to them. Yes. Meet them with unconditional love. In fact, honor them. Put them on paper. Put the thoughts, the questions up against them. And then those thoughts let go of us.
I must add, because it's so hard to give a sense of the flavor in a conversation like this, but you also approach this with, it seems to me, a lot of humor.
Absolutely.
Loving humor, I might add. Oh. All these conversations, I mean, people are putting their worst stories out, their fears,
yes,
their thoughts that are driving them nuts. And it seems to me that you sit with them with rather fearless honesty, but also with a lot of gentle humor.
Yes, when I do the work with people, you know, the room is full of laughter, because we all know what's true and what isn't. So this is so new that we're just delighted to see such a simple way. And it blows, a question, is it true, blows our mind. If a person just had one of these questions down, they could blow their mind.
The four questions, again, is it true? Can you absolutely know it's true? How do you react when you think that thought? And who would you be without the thought? And, you know, we'll conclude, I guess, on this point, Katie. I like what you say is that anyone, as well as any of these feelings and these thoughts, actually can and do lead us to freedom if we see them that way. So you start calling them gifts. Pain is a gift. And you say life becomes very kind and very abundant, beyond all limits, when you can move to that place.
Yes, yes. That's my experience.
The book, again, is called Loving What Is, Four Questions That Can Change Your Life, the work of Byron Katie. And she's been our guest today, along with her collaborator, Stephen Mitchell.
And husband.
Yes. Companions all the way through. It's been great having you. Thank you.
Thank you. A privilege to be here.